Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Google is adding nutritional information to search results. What? Some internet trends make mobile seem very attractive in the coming years. And the social media editor is dead. Or is it? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 113, recorded Thursday, May 30th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of 5 stylish frames of your choice, plus special expedited delivery, go to warbyparker.com and use the code SOCIALHOUR. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour today at sap.com/twit. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Social Hour. We are on episode 113. It's going to be very, very lucky. I can just feel it because I'm in Petaluma, California, where Twit World headquarters are, and I'm named Sarah Lane.
What's not and I'm Amber MacArthur, and I am in Toronto, which I have unofficially named the Canadian Twit World headquarters, and things are good here. It's muggy, hot. It's really like summer weather now, and I'm about to do a bunch of conferences and speaking over the next couple of weeks, so I feel this is like a good time to have the show and kick off what will be a crazy couple of weeks, but it's all good stuff.
Well, I'm happy to hear, and it sounds like you're happy to be in Toronto, where Toronto. I have to say it like a local, Toronto.
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been paying attention because you had kind of a rough winter. And I know that there were times where we'd say, oh, it's so hot outside here in California. And you'd say, not so where I'm from. So it's nice to see that the weather's turning and you're going to be out and about more and things are looking up for you, Amber.
It's good. It's going to be a good summer. I can feel it already, Sarah. And, you know, it was one of those weeks, I think, with social media news, which I think is almost every week now. It just seems like there's so much to cover. But it felt like this week there was just a ton of stuff. First up, we have Mary Meeker's Internet Trends 2013. This is a long presentation, I think more than 100 slides. I've just flipped through it. But some really interesting information and data included in this.
Yeah, and it's true. So Mary Meeker is a partner at Kleiner Perkins Caulfield Byers, which is a big venture capital firm, very well known in Silicon Valley. And this has kind of turned into her thing. She does this looking forward internet trends slideshow, basically. All Things D Conference is it's called D11. It's sort of the big once a year. You know, all the big wigs, the Tim Cooks and the Sheryl Sandbergs and Elon Musk and really sort of the big visionaries in tech will be on stage talking about the future. Mary Meeker has kind of made a name for herself, not only by being an investor, but she's sort of got this, look ahead internet trend slides. And Amber, some of this stuff is really fascinating. Obviously, we're not going to go through a 100-slide presentation on this show, but a lot of just interesting stuff that shows us the trends, not just for social networking, but the kind of gadgets that people are using as far as social networking is concerned. Mobile traffic as a percent of global internet traffic, for example, back in December of 2008, it was 0.9% of all traffic. By that time, 3 years later, in 2011, it was somewhere between 6 and 10% At this point right now, we're going up above 15% of global traffic, all of global internet traffic. And she says if that trend is expected to continue, you know, on the same bell curve, by this time next year, you know, we'll be approaching 25%. So yeah, it's just interesting because the trend, it's sort of like a chicken and egg thing, right, Amber? It's there's a trend of, well, we have all these tools, so how do companies build social tools based on the hardware that we're carrying around with us? And is it mobile, and are we on the go, and is it portable? And how does the hardware change based on the kinds of social tools that we are using, you know, that are software based as well? And I guess it's a combination of both.
You know, I think that there is one slide in this whole deck that really sums it all up. And interestingly enough, on SlideShare, this has been viewed more than 675,000 times, believe it or not. And what's really interesting, if you go to slide 9, it's not a lot of text, not a lot of charts, but there are two images. And I think it just really talks about how much things have changed over the past couple of decades. They have an image on the left for audio listeners that is the 1990s people at a concert waving their hands in the air. And then we go to 2010 and everybody waves their hands in the air, but they all have tablets and smartphones and they're all sharing. So, you know, I thought that just kind of summed up the entire presentation as far as talking about the future and how sharing and collaboration and transparency and all of those things are a big part of the deck that she's put out.
Yeah, absolutely. That really does say it all. And not necessarily in a good way. It's sort of like, okay, well, yeah, you go to a concert and you see everyone's taking photos and you want to remember that moment as well. But at what cost? You know, there is a little bit of that. Well, how do we have all these great tools that we can take with us wherever we go and not be too disconnected from what's actually in front of us rather than online? And I mean, I'm absolutely guilty of not being connected enough necessarily to... I was in a doctor's office yesterday, Amber, and I was texting somebody and I just like had to finish my sentence. And the doctor comes in and she had been like pulling allergy medicine for me or something. She comes in and she's kind of talking to me and I'm like, And I realized I was being extremely rude. And she was sort of patiently waiting for me. And she said, you obviously have somebody very important to talk to. And I realized, see, that's when it gets to be too much.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm trying to stop sneezing here. And, you know, I can't even be bothered to look up at my doctor. But yeah, it's you know, for better or for worse, we've got really powerful portable devices. And, you know, how does that, you know, we get more social because we want to take pictures of that concert and share with all of our friends on Google Plus. But do we really enjoy the concert as much in real time? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I encourage people to go take a look at it. There are some great stats in there. If you ever have to do a presentation about social media, maybe you're in the marketing department at your company and you're tasked with managing social media, there's some really good information in there. And speaking of interesting tools, this is kind of a neat story. And Sarah, I didn't see this, so a new one for me, talking about YouTube letting you add slow motion effect to your videos, which I could actually see a lot of people using this feature.
I feel like this is one of those things where, you know how all the YouTube trends for, not for everybody, but for a lot of sort of viral YouTube stars right now, it's that quick cut, jump cut type thing.
Yes.
So you kind of do a monologue, you can make it as messy as you want, and then you kind of chop it up, and that's part of how it's supposed to be at the end. So, you know, I don't know. Some people like that style better than others, but I can kind of see that being, well, I mean, so the example that we're using is this really cool slow-mo effect on a very well-shot, high-definition video of, it looks like, you know, Times Square in New York. But I can kind of see this being almost more of a tool that just gets used a lot by people who are throwing up kind of monologue videos, that YouTube star-type style, just for effect. You know, maybe if you're saying something... I don't know, you're wanting to make some sort of a point. You'd maybe sort of draw out your words so that you sounded like a monster, number two. Or I don't know, maybe that's just some of my own ideas. But I think it's kind of cool. It's a little gimmicky, right? I mean, we're not always going to want to use a slow-mo effect. But if you've got great footage, it almost makes it, especially if you set it to like a sad song or something, it makes it feel totally different if it's in slow-mo.
Yeah, and I think you're right with the different trends. I noticed all of the jump cuts. You know, I think back to, oh my gosh, what is his name? Oh, I cannot remember his name now. But probably 8 years ago, he was doing all of the online video. Yes.
Yes. He started all of that.
He
started all of that jump cut stuff because he never would blink. And so it kind of turned into this thing where, you know, it would go, you'd watch a whole thing and you'd never see him actually sort of take a pause or a breath.
And I wonder if some of these people can actually talk in complete sentences. I have to tell you, I've been watching some YouTube videos that have the style of jumping all around. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it just, it feels like cheating, but maybe because like you went to school and studied journalism. I think you went to broadcast school.
Yep.
You know, doing jump cuts was just a big no-no then. So maybe I'm just old school with that.
Well, it's funny, right? Because you and I both have been accused. Sarah says, too much, or you know, or that sort of thing. And that's part
I sneeze too much.
Yeah, you sneeze. Yeah, it's like you should really see my allergist. You'd probably be nicer to her than I was. But that's sort of part of the beauty of live, right? Live TV or internet TV or whatever you want to call this, because we're being ourselves. Then you've kind of got the other version of it where you maybe have a scripted show or a teleprompter or something, and that way you have something very specific and a very specific delivery. And I think those YouTube, that YouTube trend that we're talking about is somewhere in between the two, because it's not really, it's not scripted, but it's cleaned up to seem not exactly organic either. And it's a kind of cool effect when it's done well. I do find, though, someone will say, oh, there's this great YouTube star, you got to check out so-and-so. And I'll watch it and I'll say, it's that same style, you know? Mm-hmm. It sometimes feels a little long in the tooth for me. But I don't know. Maybe that's just because we don't get, you know, 10 million views on our videos, so I feel jealous or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably
Who
a
knows?
Little bit of both.
And this is an interesting article, speaking of journalism, because it's talking about social media editors in newsrooms and how important they are, or maybe they're not important at all. I've read the article, and it's kind of interesting, because I don't think they really argue well one way or the other, but basically potentially predicting that in 5 years or so, the social media editor will be dead and not necessary in newsrooms because it will be everybody's job. However, it seems to me like there still is a real need for the social media editor. And I've been in a lot of newsrooms lately, and they don't have one, and they need one. So I think it'll be a job for a while.
Yeah, I agree with you. This is a BuzzFeed article that makes really good points, that this whole concept of the person who knows how to fix the social Twitter thing, you know, almost like, you know, the engineer at a small company, that sort of thing, is just not necessary, because as we all become more used to using social tools, and of course, reporters specifically, everyone, is kind of checking their own work and making sure that they're promoting their own stuff. But Amber, that's almost like saying, oh, well, you don't need an editor to look over reporter stories because reporters will just figure out grammar and never make mistakes. I mean, those are the sorts of things that you do kind of need somebody who's has a specialty in a certain area. Maybe not for every single publication, maybe not for every single company, but in general, it seems like the person who is a little bit more of that expert, I was about to say social media ninja again, because I like to poke fun at people who call themselves that, but really somebody who has expertise helps take the pressure off of everybody else, and it kind of helps funnel through a one, you know, point of delivery. So if you've got 15 people working in a newsroom, say, or for a PR agency, and then there's the one person who's kind of making sure that that message is standard across a variety of media, that seems to make more sense to me. And maybe, Amber, we're just wanting all those social media editors to keep their jobs. I'm not sure. But I'm just not sure that we're all cut out for that job.
Yeah. I mean, I just think they are necessary. I mean, especially when you're trying to break a story. I mean, I've seen stories that have floated around social media sites in terms of different news that has happened here in Toronto way before I ever see it on some of the mainstream news organizations' websites or Twitter feeds. I don't know if you've been following what's happening in Toronto now with our mayor, but it's not only a bit of a disaster as far as what's happening in real life, but also through social media. There's a campaign on Kickstarter for finding this video where the mayor is allegedly smoking crack cocaine. People have given up to $200,000 to get their hands on the video. And so there's a big online component. And I think some of the news organizations haven't done the best job of following the online part of this story as far as the feedback from citizens of Toronto. And there's a lot that's happening there. So perhaps we're just not as far along as some of the other news organizations. But at the end of the day, I think it's still going to be a job for a while. You know, there's got to be people in the newsroom who just understand how these tools work and understand the trends and the new tools that are coming out and becoming popular and that will potentially replace some of the popular services today.
You know, Anthony DeRosa, who's Soup Soup on Tumblr is how I first came to know him. He really became sort of this larger than life contributor to a blog on Tumblr years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was the sort of person that everyone was just like, I mean, every single news story or cool, funny video or link to what everybody's talking about, he seemed to have first. And he got a huge following. He ended up getting hired by Reuters to be a social media editor or, you know, I'm not exactly sure what his title was, but basically that's what he's been doing and was really kicking butt on that. I follow him on Twitter, so I often would see him break news that there he is that I would see from the New York Times an hour later, that sort of thing. He was actually just hired away from Reuters by the team over at Circa, which is a San Francisco based news app. And this is I think we've talked about it on the Social Hour before. We've definitely talked about it on i5. It's an app that is a human powered summarization tool. So if there is a story about the whole crack incident regarding the mayor of Toronto, and there are, 16 news sources that have basically the update on that story, Circa will try to drill down and funnel that into, a couple of very succinct paragraphs of the facts rather than, various slants based on the publication and really basically just trying to make it easier for somebody who consumes a lot of news to get that news and take out, all the fluff, all the garbage. Mm. And that's interesting because, I mean, this guy started out as somebody who was just very, he was using Tumblr to its full potential, at least as far as news and having the finger on the pulse of what's new goes. Ended up at a respected publication and now is kind of in that next generation of news stuff. So that's all being really good at social media. So there you go. I mean, that's a great example of somebody who's achieved quite a bit of success just being very good at these tools and being on top of it. So I don't know.
Well, I guess there's that risk too that they explain in the article, and they have a couple of examples in there that if you do have a social media editor at a news organization and that individual ends up getting a larger following than the official news site, that individual can obviously take all of those followers with them as they go to a new job. So I'm seeing that happen a lot where the face of who's managing social media, all of a sudden that person becomes more popular, and then the actual news brand, if you can call it that, loses out on some of that traffic or attention. So that's also an interesting situation for some of these news organizations in terms of what do you do? Do you build up the profile of the individual or do you let them manage the account? So I think we'll see more of that as far as a conflict happening in the future.
Yeah, it's a position that didn't exist just a few years ago. So we're still navigating the waters of social, absolutely, and certainly on this show every week. This isn't so social, Amber, but I figured it was one of those things that is at least just fun to tell people about because it's a new feature that's coming to Google Search, old Google Search, which has been around for a long time. Google will add nutrition information for over 1,000 different types of foods, anything from an apple to a kind of food in its search results. Now, this is something that is going to be rolling out over, I believe, the next 10 days or so to Google users. It is not live for me because I've been trying all day to get a great example for all of you. At least in the Verge article, they've got some examples of what it would look like on the mobile version. But it's going to be Google search in general, whether it's mobile or the desktop version. And, you know, if you do this right now, usually a Wikipedia article, you might get that over on the right-hand side. And you might hit, you know, if I search for avocado calories or something like that, you know, I'm getting some about.com or maybe something getting pulled from some sort of a nutritional website up at the top. But Google's pretty good about incorporating things like this into the tops of their searches. For example, math. You know, if you type 4 + 4 into a Google search, you're not just going to be getting results where somebody's talking about that equation on a website. Google will actually have that at the top, or a definition. So I think nutritional information, Amber, what do you think about that? Do you think it has a place up at in sort of the native Google experience?
I do. You know, I think that's one thing that Google does really well is they always come up with these quirky little services or offerings that just are very human in many ways, you know, something that people are interested in. And I think this is something that people would definitely find interesting. But so I think it's a cool enhancement for sure. And speaking of enhancements, Sarah, this is kind of interesting. The Twitter update for their app updated both the native Android and iOS apps with a new tweet composer. So they're saying that this makes it easier to tweet, which I haven't found that hard. Nonetheless, it looks like they have some pretty good improvements here, especially around sharing photos and a few other tasks that you do on a regular basis.
It seems like for a while we couldn't get through a week without Facebook designing something different. And we have some Facebook news as well. But Twitter, for not just iOS, but also for Android, they are really on a roll, aren't they? I mean, this team is they're just absolutely on top of it. And I think that's because, hey, we're talking about how mobile usage is just on an exponential rise. This is really important for Twitter, especially because they know more and more people maybe only really see the mobile Twitter experience. They've got the web version of Twitter does certain things that mobile doesn't do yet, but more and more people don't even take advantage of any of that stuff. So whenever I see things like, you've got a wider timeline, ooh, you know, I think, is Twitter really thinking so much about the fact that, you know, they could take away a little bit of padding on either side? I usually get very conspiracy theorist and think they're making way for more ads. For some reason, they've got to change the width because they're going to roll out some, you know, ad placement that didn't work in the old version, but which is probably true, but maybe that has nothing to do with this particular update.
Yeah, no, it looks like a couple of good enhancements. They list them here on the website or on the nextweb.com as far as things that they've changed around. I mentioned the photo thing already, the location. You can still add or remove your location from individual tweets right from the tweet box. Tagging location is a handy way to save characters and to provide context. So that doesn't look like a massive change, but they've just kind of streamlined some of the main features as far as actually composing tweets and sharing images. At least that's what I can tell so far from this article.
Yeah, and you know, it's if you've got somebody in your contact list and they join Twitter, you'll get a little notification saying, "Hey, so and so is on Twitter now." And I think that's probably really, really helpful because even though a lot of us say Twitter's, but I mean, all my friends who know about Twitter are already on Twitter. Well, there are a lot of people discovering Twitter all the time, particularly people that you might be contacts with on your phone, say, or tablet or, you know, mobile device that, you know, they're just kind of getting the hang of all this stuff. I have a ton of people, friends that still aren't on Twitter, and I would like to know if they join because maybe they wouldn't even tell me. Maybe they wouldn't think I care.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, and speaking of Facebook, which we just mentioned a few minutes ago, and always have to have a Facebook story, they've just offered up verified pages and verified accounts. So taking the lead in some ways from Twitter, realizing that that has been quite a popular feature of Twitter, even though the mystery of getting verified is still a mystery to me around Twitter. Although I am verified, it's difficult, I know, for a lot of people to figure out how that process works. And hopefully Facebook makes it easier, but I'm not convinced based on the press release I got yesterday that talked about them rolling this out and saying that this will just happen automatically, I guess, to people that they choose. I don't know. I don't know more about it than that.
I got verified on Facebook And Amber, I was frankly, I was confused. I got a little notification saying you've been verified. And I think it actually started as an email, if I remember the chain of events, because my first reaction was, oh, this is some phishing scam. But then I didn't actually, yeah, there was an email. There was an email, and then there was a little notification. I would show you my Facebook page, but of course I don't have the little technology required for Brian to be able to look at my computer.
But we can, it says verified on the screenshot.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Right?
He's you can see it without me even being logged in. There you go. Yeah, I'm verified. I don't know why, but I am. Okay. I'm me. I don't know. It's at one point I had to, gosh, what was it? What was that? Amber, you might have had to go through this too. There was some sort of, if you wanted to convert your profile or your page to.
Yeah, I went through this.
And you had to like send them a copy of your driver's license, or what was that?
I don't think I had to send a copy of the driver's license. I changed I changed from a page back to a personal account, I guess you call it, with the subscription functionality.
So, yes.
Yeah, basically the subscription functionality made more sense to continue with just having a profile versus the page feature on Facebook. So I did that, but I don't remember driver's license. But I remember you talking about this, I think.
Yeah, now I'm trying to remember what it was a legit thing. It wasn't like, it was something where I was like, okay, well, okay. I guess that's the information you need. And now for the life of me, I can't remember what it was for. I felt like it had something to do with, yeah, like a page versus a profile, and are you the same person? Maybe to weed out impersonators or something like that. But maybe for that reason, Facebook said, you're verified for life. Because see, Amber, come on.
No verification. No verification.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, maybe I'll write the PR person back and see what the process is, because it's always such a mystery. And the reason I say this is because I've had a couple of friends who are fairly well-known public figures, and they probably should be verified on Twitter. And yet there's no real process to, as far as how you do that. You know, not everybody knows someone at Twitter, right? I was lucky enough that I did know someone and got verified, but most people aren't in that situation. And so I feel like the verification process, they should kind of open it up a little bit, because they're not going to be able to get everybody. So they should allow people to apply in a fair and reasonable way.
Yeah. In fact, there's sort of a ha-ha, wink-wink verification backlash that sometimes you sort of see these conversations that go in waves on Twitter, because certain people who kind of go like, well, I mean, I'm not a big celebrity or anything, but I've made a name for myself, and, you know, I've got a healthy amount of followers, and why can't I get verified? It would just make me feel better. You know, I want that check mark next to my name. And Twitter, yeah, there's no real accountability. I got verified on Twitter, and it was in the same week that Tom Merritt got verified on Twitter, and we thought there must be some sort of thing going, some sort of algorithmic thing. Maybe we have enough friends in common or something, because we couldn't figure out why both of us, after years and years of being ignored, suddenly got verified out of the blue. I didn't have anybody to ask at Twitter.
I know.
I mean, I could have, but I didn't.
It's so funny because in Canada, we just got our first Twitter office. So Twitter Canada just opened up in the past few weeks. And Kristen Stewart, she is the head of Twitter Canada, not the actress.
Okay.
And she has just taken on that job and is building a team. And on her Twitter account, which is just at Kristen Stewart, it says head of Twitter Canada. And no, I don't know how to get you verified. And it kind of makes me chuckle, because I'm like, if you don't know how does it actually happen? Right? So I don't know. It's an interesting situation. So I don't have a really good answer, but
she's bluffing. I think she just doesn't want people to be DMing her
of
left
course,
and right,
yeah.
saying, please, you've always been my very favorite person ever. Please,
but it is a weird process as far as how it happens right now. And I feel for the people who maybe, especially, I think this is going to happen even more on Facebook. There are going to be individuals where maybe someone has set up an account and is trying to pretend they're you, or a page, or this happens all the time to brands and different companies, where someone has set up a fan page and you really want to verify your company page because you want to show the people, your customers, that this is legit.
Yeah.
So I think they need to open up that verification process, particularly with Facebook, because I see that all the time with different different companies, small and large.
Yeah, I think Facebook, maybe even more than Twitter. I don't know. I guess it really depends on the brand. But Facebook is, I mean, it's very brand happy. There are a lot of brands who can keep up a Facebook page, and there's all sorts of multimedia elements. And we've talked about businesses that do a good job of, you know, changing profile pictures regularly to maybe thank some of their customers, and all sorts of great stuff that happens with brands on Facebook. So verification makes a lot of sense there. On Twitter, I feel like, and even for an individual on Facebook, it makes less sense, because what do you get out of it? I mean, you don't gain more followers. You know, back in the day when Twitter had a suggested users list, I guess they still do. But back when, you know, a lot of like tech celebrities were on that list, that was the difference between having, you know, 10,000 followers and having 1 million followers. Yeah. So there was a huge incentive. Everybody wanted to get on the list, even if it didn't mean anything. And, you know, verifying doesn't mean much, except maybe if there was somebody impersonating you, then somebody who was doing a small bit of due diligence would know that that wasn't an authentic account. I think a lot of it is very ego-based, Amber. It's like, I want to be verified because you got verified, kind of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. So we'll keep you posted on that. I'll do a little digging, or at least around Facebook, to figure out if they're going to open up the process.
Sounds good. Well, without further ado, I think we should discuss Amber's amazing glasses because you've been wearing them and I've wanted to say something about them, but I wanted to wait until we were able to thank the folks who made those glasses for you, and that's Warby Parker. We've actually shown these glasses off in the past, Amber, because they're adorable. And you didn't go for the sunglasses, which Warby Parker also does.
I know.
I have my own here, but you've got these awesome reading glasses.
I fell in love with them. I love the sort of cherry red frames, and they have so many different stylish designs. And so I do have a lot of sunglasses as well, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to get a pair of glasses and kind of mix it up. And for our audio listeners, Sarah's wearing her sunglasses right now. They look great.
Thank you for saying so.
They're very dark. You could just, you know, sit and stare at people. No one would know.
Well, you know what's neat about these glasses is I love these glasses. These are absolutely my favorite glasses. But what's cool about Warby Parker, and we should talk about the way that Warby Parker makes it very, very easy to buy glasses online, because you might say to yourself, well, hold on a second. That's like buying shoes online when you've never tried that style before. You don't know if it's going to be, you know, true to size, if it's going to fit. Glasses are very personal. You know, we've all put on glasses that seemed so great until you put it on your face, looked in the mirror, and we're like, no, my gosh, that's really, really unflattering. It does not work for me. Warby Parker makes very high quality, very stylish sunglasses and prescription glasses that start at low prices. I mean, sunglasses these days, I don't know, I mean, you could pay $300-$400. It's nuts. Warby Parker Titanium Collection starts at just $145. Other glasses that they offer are just $95. The $145 includes prescription lenses, high quality Japanese titanium, French non-rocking screws. Hey, you know, these are nice glasses. All the glasses come with anti-reflective and anti-glare coating, a hard case, a cleaning cloth. I have my hard case. I just throw it in my purse because it's really nice. And you know, I'm throwing all sorts of other stuff in there when, you know, sort of my everyday bag. And I never have to worry about my glasses getting crunched or anything like that. And really, besides these prices, there's no additional cost. But what's cool is the free home try-on program. And that's how you're able to get around the idea that you have to try on your glasses before you know which one you want. What you do is you go to warbyparker.com. So that's warbyparker.com. And then you choose 5 pairs of glasses. The glasses that that I ended up with were one of the 5 that I thought, yeah, it kind of looks like me. I chose a little tortoiseshell style. These came in black as well. And then Warby Parker sends them all to you so you can try them on. Little special frame box, little prepaid shipping label so that you can return them. And what you do is you take that opportunity to try all of them on and then pick the one that you like the best. Then choose the frames, and Warby Parker, you send them all back because they're like the tester version, right? They're not going to send you the nicest version. They're going to send you the tester version that it's okay if it gets a little bit more banged up. Then you choose your glasses, and then they send you your glasses. What's cool is that for every pair of glasses that you purchase, Warby Parker also sends a pair to someone in need. They have great partnerships with nonprofits such as Vision Spring. If you haven't heard of them, absolutely look them up. So it's a do-good operation as well as a very cool pair of glasses for you. Price the glasses low enough to make them not only a fashion accessory, but something that you will enjoy wearing that will help you cut out that sunlight or, in Amber's case, be able to read a little bit better. So be sure to check free home try-on. And then when you decide to purchase, enter the code SOCIALHOUR and you'll get expedited shipping. Hey, it's just a gift from us to you. Summer's right around the corner. You need new glasses. Social Hour, that's all one word, at warbyparker.com. New pair of glasses and get expedited shipping.
Absolutely. Sarah, I have a question. In the little in the lower third, it says you get a new. Oh, okay, get a new pair of stylish glasses. I can't. Oh my gosh, I was trying to read it and I realized that I wasn't even close enough. So you get expedited shipping, right?
Yeah. So if you and the try on, I have to say, so these are the frames that I ended up picking. And what's cool is that I had five different pairs of glasses here at Twit, and I pulled whoever was around. Not that many people liked this style. They were like, I don't know, they're a little too big for you, or they're very dark, and I don't know. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about what you like, right? And I said, screw all of you. I'm getting these. These are the ones I want. I think the style is called Robinson, and I've never been happier. So there you go. It's all about what you like for yourself. Although you could pull people that you trust and, you know, your stylish
and then
friends.
Ignore them. Ignore
and then,
them after
and then
that.
Say, I don't really like your input, but thanks for nothing. Thanks to Warby Parker for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love you guys. All right, Amber, let's move on to a social media disaster, actually, of epic proportions.
Yeah, you know, so this is the JCPenney story that has been floating around the web for the past couple of days. And I'll tell you the ending of the story first. It looks like they currently have a position open for a senior social media specialist based on this blog post on MarketWatch. So they're looking for someone to manage social media because they got in a lot of hot water, and excuse the pun, based on a kettle that they were selling in their stores or online that looked a little bit too much like Hitler. And if you look at the shape of the kettle and the handle, I can definitely see how some people could guess that it was definitely in his image. Caused them a lot of controversy, a lot of people ordering it. And then JCPenney had to go to Twitter to defend themselves and saying that any resemblance was totally unintentional. If we had designed it to look like something, we would have gone with a snowman or something fun. And it looks like that was kind of their response to what was a flood of people talking about this in the social media world.
Oh, boy. I don't know, Amber. I mean, I don't want to seem obtuse here, but if somebody had not pointed that out to me, I would have not seen Hitler in that tea kettle. It looks like a tea kettle to me.
Yeah.
It looks like a tea kettle. I mean, it's almost like one of these, when you stare into the Escher painting long enough, you finally see what it looks like. It's like, that's a bit of a stretch. And maybe that's just me. I mean, does it look really, really inappropriate to anybody else?
Well, I can't get it out of my head now.
Well,
that's the
exactly.
Thing.
Like, because
once you see it beside
the
image, yeah.
But would you have seen that on your own?
No, I don't think so. But I think the bigger issue is how many people were discussing it online and how their reaction really wasn't necessarily that prompt or that specific. Even that Twitter tweet I just read, you know, they don't seem to be taking it seriously, but I don't know. I think it's one of those things where there's a reason that they're looking for a social media manager because they realize how something that where they didn't intend to do something like this or have this reaction online based on the design of the kettle, how it can just explode literally overnight and they don't have the resources to manage this. And we see this all the time.
Yeah, we do. We do. Especially, I mean, JCPenney is a very large retail brand. And at least in the U.S., there are quite a few of them. And it's one of those things where it's like you can't afford to sort of go, I don't know. We don't know what our answer is. Or we don't really have the kind of bandwidth to deal with this. Or maybe simply not even really knowing that something like this was exploding online because you just don't have people watching out for this sort of stuff. That's very, very key. It does seem like a mountain made out of a molehill a bit. But again, sometimes those mountains need to be dealt with, or your brand suffers, even if the crowd was rioting for no good reason.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the company's done nothing wrong, but I think they need to be able to defend themselves in the social media space. And so it's one of those situations where it makes sense that they're looking for someone now. So if anyone out there is looking for a social media gig and wants to help turn the company around in the social media space, this looks like a pretty big challenge and opportunity at the same time.
Yeah, JCPenney, now I'm forgetting his name. Chat room, help me out. Formerly of Apple, went to JCPenney to turn around sort of like the retail arm, the way that the stores were laid out, and now is leaving JCPenney. And there was some talk that maybe he'd go back to Apple again because Apple still has to replace their head of retail that they let go last year. Anyway, I don't know. I'm getting too far into something. But where was he? See, this is what happens when Apple executives who were sent to JCPenney to turn around the brand leave. We get Hitler kettles that also Hitler cats.
So bizarre. Okay, so if you watch a lot of YouTube videos, this is our social tip of the day, and this is a Chrome extension, and this will help you fight off a problem that I think we all have, and I know Sarah and I always leave a lot of tabs open, and I'm sure you've had a situation before where you've opened up a tab or a YouTube video is playing and you don't know which tab is open. Well, this extension can help you. It's called YouTube Pause, and it puts a little button into your browser and allows you to just simply click on this extension once you've downloaded it, and then it will automatically pause any YouTube videos that are playing in the background. Very simple, very easy, and very free.
I love this. That's perfect.
I knew you would have this problem, Sarah, because I know you open a lot of tabs.
I'm a tab insane person. And I love the idea. The problem is that, you know, if you have more than a few tabs open, I've got, I don't know, 20 tabs open right now, which is part of the problem. I'm part of my own problem, not my own solution, but it's very hard to manage, especially when you've got video or anything that's playing in the background, that sort of thing. So I love this extension, and that's one of the nice, really nice things about Chrome. I know that Chrome isn't perfect, and in fact, I've had some problems with it lately, but and there are certainly extensions for other browsers as well, but I particularly seem to like the Chrome extensions, which are often only available on Chrome.
Yep, they're smart and good.
And Lifehacker is just, for anybody who's watching or listening to us and does not check Lifehacker regularly, there are so many great little life hacks, but little tips and tweaks, and some of it applies to social media, and some of it is personal stuff, but definitely something to add to your regular reading list as far as blogs
yes,
go.
For sure. And our next story is about Tumblr, Sarah, which I know you spend more time on than I do, and this is not necessarily a good story for them.
No. So, and Brian's RTD right now. And Brian, be careful when you're scrolling, because some of the examples used in this story are somewhat profane, because the idea is that Tumblr, as we talked about, was recently acquired by Yahoo. So there you go. And a lot of the speculation was, well, this is definitely going to turn into more ads in our Tumblr feeds. That is pretty much a given. You're going to start seeing inline ads in your Tumblr dashboard, which is very similar to a Facebook news feed or a Twitter feed for anybody who's not already using Tumblr. But that's, you know, they're sponsored web posts, as they're called. And right now, there are some launch partners like, these are big companies, Viacom, Ford, Universal Pictures, Capital One, Denny's, as we saw, was they kind of had an animated GIF of Denny's, which honestly, I really don't hate that. It's sort of a cool picture. But there are some other design tweaks that were made that have really, really upset users. And I think it probably has less to do with the fact that, oh, there's a, you know, a like button at the bottom of a post rather than at the top, and more about the idea that if Yahoo bought Tumblr because Yahoo represents, you know, the man, and Tumblr used to be indie, that everything's just going to go to hell in a handbasket type of a thing. So, Amber, something as simple as it used to be upper right-hand corner was where you would heart a post if you liked it, or where you would hit the reblog button. That has changed to lower right-hand corner. I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe they feel like it's a little bit streamlined because down at the bottom of the post is where you'll see things like Tumblr hashtags and that sort of thing. But TechCrunch has a great, and we'll put this in our show notes too, a really great collection of, as they say, teens freaking out about the way that Tumblr has changed just slightly, which really reminds me of how people freak out anytime Facebook changes their design as well. It's a very long list of absolute overreactionary freakouts.
I think
Tumblr design,
especially when you know. I mean, I think Twitter has done a really good job of rolling out really small changes over time. And I think the companies who have these larger changes where they move things around, I mean, just disrupts users. And I know this is definitely a first world problem. So at the end of the day, people have to get over it. But I even find in Google Plus, for example, when they did the redesign a while ago and changed the way your page looks when you log in and you see all of your stream, I still can't get used to it. And I feel like there are certain habits that you develop and you want things to kind of look a little bit the same. And it seems like it's just frustrating a lot of people with Tumblr.
Yeah, I think Tumblr has its work cut out for it. Well, Yahoo, I guess. Making sure that things change. It will never be completely behind the scenes. I mean, if there weren't ads in your dashboard and all of a sudden you see a Denny's sunset GIF, you're going to notice that, and you might be a little put out by it, but I think we kind of have to get used to that. And hopefully what Tumblr can do is, as Yahoo said, stay somewhat unscrewed up, and we'll be able to get, you know, ease into the idea of there being advertising, because that's obviously why Yahoo bought Tumblr. They didn't buy Tumblr just to never advertise or monetize the huge community. And some design tweaks, I don't know, maybe I'm nuts, but I kind of like the like button at the bottom. I know that some
Sarah, you're going to get hate mail.
I know. I see on TechCrunch that some people are calling it, that's Tumblr. Why is Tumblr upside down? So it's just a design thing. It's not the end of the world. Yeah, look, people are even upset and going over to Spanish. WTF Tumblr? No me gusta.
Not pretty.
It's not pretty, Amber. All right, so let's talk about something that is, well, you know, I was going to say it was pretty, but you really can't see much of it, so it sounds pretty, and that's Audible.com. They are our second sponsor of this lovely show today. You know Audible. We've talked about Audible quite a bit on the show because it's a wonderful way to be reading books regularly by listening to them, using your ears rather than your tired, strained eyes. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across a variety of different genres, literature and fiction and mystery and nonfiction and even some periodicals. Audible is really, really a lot of fun. And the idea of listening, you sometimes hear people say, well, you're not really reading the book because you didn't really read it. You listened to it. But it's really the same thing. You're just using your ears. And there's something about an audiobook. I don't know, maybe it's because I remember how nice it was to get books read to me when I was younger or something, but it is just, I mean, it's so, you can sort of close your eyes and let your imagination run wild. You can be reading, quote unquote, audiobooks while you're in your car or while you're stuck in traffic or while you're kind of stuck anywhere, really. I've actually been at the grocery store listening to my audiobook, and sometimes I'll laugh if I'm listening to something that's, you know, kind of a funny moment, you know, and I realize, well, I seem like an absolute nutcase, but I'm reading all the time. And, you know, there is even that sort of, they say that kids who read regularly, you know, they have a better vocabulary, they're better spellers. And that's true because you're looking at the words, but there's something about listening too where your vocabulary does get better because you think to, oh, that's the way that word is used in it. Oh, that was really a nice, eloquent way to use that in a sentence. So I think you get a lot out of audiobooks, even in a different way than reading. And for listeners and viewers, of course, of The Social Hour, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. If you haven't tried it out, you definitely should. You can, in fact, choose an audiobook, any audiobook of your choice. Go ahead and download it for free. If you go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour, you can try Audible free for 30 days. You know, get a sense of how Audible feels. And that free audiobook that you choose to start off with is yours for free. You don't have to give it back or anything at the end of those 30 days. So to download an audiobook for free, just find something on Audible that you like. Go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. You get to keep that book when you're done with it because all these books are downloadable titles that become part of your book library. You can revisit it at any time. They don't go away. You know, when your rental period expires, it's not how Audible works. So if you're like Leo Laporte, you've got thousands of books because
I have a pick that I didn't know that was on Audible, but I definitely want to check this out. So I just got the book Most Talkative by Andy Cohen. I got it from a really good friend of mine who happens to be the producer of the TV show that I do. So, you know, Andy Cohen, obviously being one of the heads at Bravo and behind the Real Housewives series. Not that I watch that all the time, but it's neat because it looks like he actually narrates this book and it has a really high rating on Audible, almost 4.5 stars all the way across. And I think it even got nominated for an Audible award.
Big, a byline, and a chance to meet and interview one of my two idols, Susan Lucci or Sam Donaldson.
Oh my gosh, that's the best. Susan Lucci all the way. Well, she's a soap opera star for anybody who doesn't know who that is. But yeah, that's great. I love Andy. Well, and it's so nice that he narrates it in his own voice because he's pretty popular these days, and it's nice to hear him. You feel like you're, you know, watching one of his shows.
Yeah, so there's a fun pick for you.
Well, thank you very much. That is awesome. Thank you so much to Audible, of course, for sponsoring us. You've been the Social Hour's friend for a long time now. All right, well, we've got some... I mentioned before the show, but for anybody who wasn't watching our pre-show, if you have sent us an email, we have had some email issues. We don't know why. I've got some sort of like crazy corrupt by a dragon email account for the Social Hour. So your email might be lost in the ether somewhere, and it might just be sort of patiently waiting to be downloaded. We are working on it behind the scenes. So if you have sent us an email, we are not ignoring you. You can continue to email us. In fact, you might as well send that email again if you haven't heard back. TheSocialHour@twit.tv, of course. But in the meantime, I thought that, you know, we could pick a couple of stories that it's very possible you emailed us about that are kind of hot on social media right now. One of them that I saw quite a few people sharing earlier today on Twitter is an article over at the Wall Street Journal about cord cutting. Cord cutting, of course, referring to people who say, oh, I don't need cable TV anymore. I've got the internet to help me out with that. I have other means of watching the shows that I want, or maybe I'm just not interested in television anymore. And this study that the Wall Street Journal cites says, you know, what's happening is the cord cutting doesn't really always have to do with people getting rid of cable television. It's getting rid of home internet. And it's not because people don't need the internet anymore. It's because with faster data connections on smartphones and tablets and public Wi-Fi and a variety of ways that you can pretty much get through your day on the internet, it's almost like having that home phone, a landline phone, where many, many people still have them, especially for emergency purposes. But people like me, I haven't had a home phone in going on 10 years now because I've had a cell phone. So it's sort of the same idea. Cord cutters can just get by without spending that, I don't know, anywhere from 50 to, you know, hundreds of dollars a month on fast home internet. Amber, what do you think? Do you fall anywhere on the spectrum?
You know what? First of all, I can't even imagine cutting internet. That was giving me heart palpitations as you were talking about it, because it seems like that would be the last thing I would cut off. I would I can think of many things I would sooner get rid of in my life than my internet connection. I don't know what that says about me. But nonetheless, you know, it's still a pretty small percentage based on this article. They talk about it being that last year around 1% of U.S. households stopped paying for home internet, and 0.4% of households canceled their pay television subscriptions. So still very, very tiny percentages, I think. But it does make sense to me, because I think more and more, I mean, I find myself going to so many places, and the first thing, whether I'm at a conference or at a restaurant or a cafe, is, do you have Wi-Fi? Do you have Wi-Fi? And then so many places are offering free Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. So I think for a lot of people, maybe they can go without internet. I know internet at my place, for example, I think we pay $75, and the internet isn't even that great. I mean, it's expensive. So I don't know. But I would definitely cut cable before internet. There is no question.
Yeah, I don't pay for cable now. You know, it's funny, too, because you get we're getting into specific deals with specific companies, but I know that I have colleagues who say, but the plan for cable plus internet that gives me fast enough internet is actually cheaper than internet only. So there are certain times where you're not actually even incentivized to get rid of your cable. I have figured out a plan that works pretty well for me. I don't use cable. I definitely have home internet, but again, we're podcasters, Amber. It's like we can't just say, I'll just get by with my iPhone for a while, because we have kind of have to work from home in a way that's unique to a lot of people. But at the same time, if I just needed internet access and for whatever reason there wasn't, I don't know, a connection, I've got my iPad that, you know, I've got a data plan on. Even cafes, there's sort of this new cafe trend where they'll let you bring your laptop and work at a table, but they don't offer free Wi-Fi or even paid Wi-Fi because they don't want you to sit there all day. Mm. But then people have little Wi-Fis and portable internet, or you've got my iPad with LTE, and it's like, sometimes I don't even notice if I'm on Wi-Fi or not. It works just fine. So I think as more and more people start to enjoy fast internet and can get the things done that they want to do, and if you can watch a movie, you know, maybe you don't need home internet after all.
Exactly. All right, Sarah. And this is not so much about the internet or TV, but instead a movie star. And what's really cool about this story is that I feel like it talks about or uses a bunch of the best technology that we've talked about on the Social Hour. For one, this is something taking place on Reddit. And the actor is Samuel L. Jackson. And of course, everybody loves him. Mm-hmm. And he recently launched this contest on Reddit. The idea being that people have to leave comments on his little post on Reddit, and you can leave up to a 300-word comment, and the best comment will be read aloud in video form, obviously, by Samuel L. Jackson. Now, there are a bunch of different submissions. One, I think, got more than 25,000 votes already, and it talks about waking up in the morning. There are some swear words, so again, don't zoom in. But the neat thing is he's doing this to help to raise awareness about a cause that's very important to him, which is all Alzheimer's. And in conjunction with this, he's kind of pushing people as well over to Prizeo, which we've talked about on the Social Hour, where he is asking people to donate money starting at $3. And the person who ends up getting picked at the end will be able to have lunch with him and a bunch of other prizes that he's offering up on Prizeo. So again, it's kind of like a mash of different social media tools to offer this contest with Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, and people love it when celebrities do things like this, right? Yeah. Because he has an agenda. It's for a good cause. But instead of just sort of like, I don't know, donating a lot of money or hoping that other people do or that sort of thing, it's like, hey, I care about this so much that I want to make something fun out of it, and I'll read what you want me to say because I'm Samuel L. Jackson and people love my voice, and he'll probably have some fun with it and everybody gets a kick out of it. And, you know, it's sort of like this could be a really good viral marketing campaign. And I guess it kind of is. But when you throw the nonprofit part of it into the equation, then it's just like absolutely a win-win for all folks. I'd love to know who thought up this idea. Was it Samuel? Mr. Jackson, I suppose I should call him. Or, you know, did somebody tell him about Reddit? I'd kind of love to know what his background is with Reddit specifically and how well he knows that community.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I saw Alexis Ohanian tweet about this, and I'm just going to look up his tweet because I thought he said something about how this all happened and came to be. So I'll look that up while we talk about the next story, which is about the Google Plus iOS app updates and very, very slick. Some really cool improvements here.
Yes. And don't get bent out of shape when you're like, ah, they're talking about iOS again. Because if you're an Android user, this is something that you're actually already used to. This was some photo editing functionality that was announced at Google I/O a few weeks ago, and the iOS app is just kind of catching up to the Android version. And what's neat is, and Leo was showing this off on iPad Today, this week's iPad Today, is it's really cool because, let me open up Google Plus, I thought I already had it open. When you're in your photo area, there are a variety of features and enhancements that Google Plus now can do for you. Now, if you turn on auto syncing of photos, if you are logged into your Google Plus account, let's say, you know, from your iPhone, you can go ahead and back up your photos to Google Plus, which is not necessarily sharing all of those photos with all your friends in Google Plus, because you don't necessarily want to do that. It's all private, and then you can share one thing at a time. You know, for example, this is never a picture I shared with anybody, but it's been synced to my Google Plus account. That was a photo of, gosh, it looks like late night food in a Vegas hotel, if my memory serves. And I've got some new options now. I can go ahead and choose to turn auto enhance on. So basically that's Google making it look nicer. Sorry that you see a lot of reflection of me in this photo. And then, you know, once you go ahead and enhance it, you can kind of look at what it looked like before, and you know, this picture didn't change too much. It just got slightly brighter. You can see that it's enhanced over here, but I have other options as far as setting it as my profile photo or maybe my cover. That'd be a really bad cover. I can go ahead and copy to a particular album, and I can go ahead and share from here. So what's also nice is that if I had taken a bunch of photos in a row. Right, so Google can tell, because Google is a very smart little robot, that I've taken a bunch of photos and there are a lot of similarities between them. You know, maybe I took a bunch of pictures of my child's soccer game. So there's a lot of pictures of, you know, blurry running children. And let's say you took 50 of them. Google would scan those pictures and say, oh, you know, I think this is the best one. You know, this sunset picture is the most in focus picture. It's the most aesthetically pleasing. Here's the one where you see, the faces the best, that type of thing. So there are a lot of really cool enhancements that Google is able to roll into Google Plus, which is a very social app, obviously, Amber, but this almost makes it very compelling to use as just kind of a personal photo repository where Google can sift through a lot of photos that maybe, you know, you wouldn't necessarily ever see again. You know, they're sort of stuck on your phone, not being used. So, I don't know. I'm kind of playing around with it here.
It looks really cool, I have to say.
Yeah. Good stuff. I made that image of Leo a while ago.
Handsome.
Actually, no, I didn't make it. Somebody sent it to me. Here I am trying to take credit. Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive, Sarah.
Yeah, isn't that great? No, that wasn't me. I totally made that up. Yeah, so these are enhancements that pretty much just put iOS on a more even playing field with Android, because, of course, when it comes to Google, often Android users enjoy a better version of the same tools. But it's definitely worth checking out. Google Plus is starting to become something, Amber, that I think is... I mean, it's a great social tool for certain people. And if you don't want to use it in a social way, you can use it as photo backup. And all of a sudden, we're seeing these great photo enhancement tools. You can add filters
messaging
to your photos and messaging and Hangouts, which is now its own app. And It gets more and more robust all the time. It's obvious that the people at Google are working really hard behind the scenes. And the Google Plus app itself, I mean, even if you're not in the photos area, you know, if you just kind of go to the general, my general page, you've got these nice cards now and of varying sizes. And, you know, you click on something, you see it larger. And the design is getting better all the time as well. Like skyscrapers.
Just so you know, Sarah, I was looking up and I saw Alexa's tweet about Samuel L. Jackson. He said, "I'm very proud of this campaign." So I don't know if he was behind it, but that was a tweet that I had seen. And other than I couldn't find too much information about how the idea happened, but it looks like they're getting very close to their goal of $100,000. And Thursday night, which is tonight when we're recording the show, is tonight at midnight, I think the contest actually ends. So they'll have a winner pretty soon, at least the part where someone leaves a 300 a word comment. So we'll see what happens with that.
Well, Alexis seems to know all the cool people. Of course, Alexis Ohanian, who's been our guest on The Social Hour at least a couple of times, who is the co-founder of Reddit and is extremely involved in the I don't know, you call them the do-good community. I like to think we're all sort of part of that, but Alexis is just...
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's really involved in charitable organizations, and that's awesome. I'd love to know more. I think
and
Alexis,
he likes
Alexis
cats, Sarah.
I know.
He likes cats. And speaking of cats, after we have our next sponsor announcement, we have a little cat fun in our Ratter Fad, which, Sarah, I've decided that all Ratter Fads are now going to be cat-related for the month of June.
Excellent.
Just for you.
Amber.
Just for you. I know.
I thought I couldn't like you more. You are the best
friend
a girl could have.
I've just stepped it up a notch in Sarah's books.
Absolutely. So a little reminder that that we do love hearing from you, and our apologies if we haven't read your email or played your video or your voicemail on the air. We will get that fixed as soon as possible. In the meantime, I'll just quickly remind you that you can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. So that's 2626, S-O-C-I-A-L. Kind of fun, half numbers, half letters, all good. Or record a video, upload it somewhere, and send us the link. You know, Vimeo or YouTube or wherever. Just don't send us an attachment because we don't want to open those. All right, Amber, true to word, we're going to talk about a very special cat after we thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. You know, I didn't want to say anything because I knew we'd be talking about it eventually, but that JCPenney story is a real wake-up call for anybody who works in social media in the enterprise. Things can go wrong online, and it only takes a couple of disgruntled people to spread the word that something's amiss with your company, and all of a sudden, it has spiraled out of control, and then you are trying to put out fires all over blogs and Twitter and Facebook, and it's gone viral, and it's bad PR, and what are you going to do? It can be very hard to stay on top of that kind of thing when you are working in the enterprise, trying to keep on top of social media as it relates to your business. SAP has the solution. In fact, it's called Social Media Solutions. Could not be more clear, but it's really a way for large enterprises to listen and engage with social media in a systematic way. It gives you all the tools you need to be able to listen to what people are saying, capture reports on the conversations that they're having, helps you build better products because you can incorporate that customer feedback into future efforts, helps you identify customers who are ready to buy your product. If you're selling stuff, you definitely want to be able to help make that sale. If the customer is just sort of on the fence, you want to be able to reach out to them at the right time and make sure that they're giving them the information that they need. And then there's also the engaging component. So you listen and then you engage. It's we hear what you've said. We are JCPenney. We've got, you know, there's an issue here. Let us reach out to the people that need to be reached out to so that we can calm them down if they, you know, in the case it's negative feedback. But it also is really good for positive feedback. I mean, if somebody absolutely loves your brand, you want to be able to thank them. You want to be able to maybe give them a perk on their next purchase of your product, that sort of thing. So the engaging component is what helps you improve customer service and support because you can choose which messages are routed to various people on your social media team. If you're a big enough company, you might have a few of you, and how they should be responded to. So, for example, if it's a customer service question about X, you know that the answer is going to be this because you've all set this up in a systematic way. Activity on the social media stream, on Twitter, on Facebook, or just on some sort of a review site where all of a sudden your product pops up and somebody's reviewed it, you might want to make sure that you get back to that person or people so that you can drive sales, so you can solve customer problems, nip it in the bud before it gets nuts, and then, you know, just rapidly respond to customer feedback. So you gain that reputation as the company who cares, because more often than not, you could care very much, but if you don't have a handle on how to interact with your community, you end up coming across as somebody who doesn't care. You don't want that for your company. Social Media Solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing. It's a lot more than marketing because it improves the customer service and support experience for your customers, which is absolutely what we're all looking to do. Go to sap.com/twit, so sap.com/twit, and take a guided tour to see for yourself how Social Media Solutions from SAP works. And, you know, if you work at a large enterprise, maybe the person who makes this sort of decisions, tell them to go over to sap.com/twit and check it out, and maybe they're the ones who can push this forward. Social Media Solutions, and thanks to SAP for sponsoring us. Now, Amber, how about that cat you promised?
You know what, Sarah? If it were April 1st, I would think that this was a joke, but it is not. And in fact, this was originally reported in the Wall Street Journal. This is all about Grumpy Cat. And it looks like Grumpy Cat has landed a movie deal. Grumpy Cat also has an agent, which is a whole other story, and it's disturbing in many different ways. Mm-hmm. But this particular deal is with the production company behind Adam Sandler's 2011 film, Jack and Jill, Broken Road Productions. It was on Mashable today, the story in terms of breaking this. And I don't know too many more details about it than that, except that Grumpy Cat is going to be in a movie, and Grumpy Cat also has a book coming out. So if you head to New York this weekend, Sarah, Grumpy Cat might be there, because I guess Grumpy Cat's in New York promoting her upcoming book, Grumpy Cat, A Grumpy Book, Disgruntled Tips and Activities Designed to Put a Frown on Your Face. What can I say?
What do we make of this? Okay. Exploitation of pets, on one hand, but I don't like it.
Or happiest cat in the world
who gets all of the tuna she could ever want. I don't know. Grumpy Cat went to South by Southwest, which is a big interactive festival, takes place in Austin, Texas. She was there this year, basically just sitting there so people could take pictures of her, you know, and apparently the lions were around the block. Grumpy Cat was a big hit, because she's an internet sensation and people like to see that sort of thing in real life. And I was of the mind that, you know, this cat should just stop flying on airplanes and stay in her wonderful yard. And I don't even know if she has a wonderful yard, but I follow her on Tumblr and there's always pictures of her frolicking and, you know, among flowers. So I assume she has a really nice yard. And I think to myself, this cat should not be toted around, you know, with people taking flash photos in her face. But I've never met her. So maybe she is enjoying herself, even though she looks very, very grumpy. See, she's always in the flowers. I want her to stay there. But maybe she and her owner have some sort of an understanding. If she's in a movie, I just don't want her to be in danger. I want her to have fun.
I agree with you.
That's all.
Here's the thing. You should probably read this article that's on CNET. I just stumbled across it right now. It's called Why the Grumpy Cat Movie is a Bad Idea. Uh-oh. And the writer of this article says, the whole Grumpy Cat Goes to Hollywood Road is not all paved in fancy feast and catnip mice. Let's look at the history of internet memes that have become successful movies. Just give me a minute. I'll try to think of something. And then she gives up because there are none. And then it goes on to write, the one piece of this news that most worries me is the plan to give Grumpy Cat the power of human speech. I don't even know what this is all about. But it does seem like it's just maybe gone too far.
Oh, I see what they're saying. So this is going to be like, oh, what's that movie where the baby has Bruce Willis's voice? Look Who's Talking? Horrible. Very upsetting. Babies with adult voices is one of my biggest pet peeves in life.
And
if Grumpy
that.
Cat has a human voice, it'd be like Garfield with a human voice, where it's just like, it's just funnier when you don't do that. Because then the imagination is all ruined. Someone's choosing it for you. I say no. I don't like this at all now, Amber. If that's what's going on, no. Grumpy Cat, stay in your yard. Don't go.
Protest.
Don't turn into a child actor. Grumpy Cat is very young, by the way. Grumpy Cat is just over 1 year old. She's got a whole life ahead of her. She does not need to turn into another, you know, 13-year-old grumpy cat in...
Hanging out with Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, with rehab and, you know, a little ankle bracelet because you can't leave the house because you're on house arrest.
Exactly. There are a whole slew of problems
that
could happen.
Boy, this got dark quick, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, so this is not rad. This is a really bad fad. And I guess grumpy cat should just be... free. Maybe there's a free Grumpy Cat site that you could start, Sarah, and I can promote it.
Well, you know, there was actually an article right around the time of South by Southwest that was encouraging us to all tweet free Grumpy Cat. I did, by the way. I decided to do that. I was part of that train. I just feel like there are so many internet celebrities. Not all animals, either. Just internet celebrities. And do they all have to translate to some other, you know, movie or, you know, mall appearance or something? I say no. But maybe I'm just living in a fantasy land and it doesn't work that way. I know Boo the dog had to do the rounds on Good Morning America and the Today Show when Boo had his first Boo book.
I was going to say first it's animals and then it's children, but that's already happened with that horrific show, Toddlers and Tiaras, which should be banned for life.
Yeah, I know. It's the word. This is all sort of the same thing, right? And people say, oh, but their owners are so nice. And it's like, I'm sure that's true.
Their owners and their moms.
Yeah, you get right. Yes. That's a blurry line right there. Brian, did you make that while we were actually? Brian is very talented.
I am noticing
that.
This is
why we keep him around. This is why we keep
Ryan's amazing.
Yeah, well, don't say it too much. We'll get
it. That was a Look Who's Talking poster for the movie with Grumpy Cat?
Yeah, Grumpy Cat. Good stuff.
Got me so excited I just dropped my mic.
We had Leo, if anyone heard a yelp about half an hour ago, that was Leo stepping on Ozzy the dog. Ozzy's fine, by the way. But we had a few people in our chat room saying, who's screaming? That was
you know
dog.
What? That's so funny. I thought it was my son, and I was like, I don't know what's going on upstairs.
That was happening here, just behind awesome. That door over there. So, Amber, I think before, lights start falling from our studio here, we should probably wrap this show up. We give you an hour plus, so it was a social hour with a little something extra. Thanks to everybody for watching, especially those of you who are able to watch live. We pre-taped this show, so anybody who's tuning in at our normal time, which is 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Friday, we'll rerun the episode. But we had to shoot live because I'm actually going to not be in the studio tomorrow. So
Sarah's going to the Grumpy Cat Book Expo in New York. Just admit it, Sarah.
That's right. Wasn't supposed to say about that. It's actually, I had no idea.
Sarah.
If I happen to stroll and see Grumpy Cat, I might wait in line to say hello to her because I love her very much. But
or you
no,
might take.
I'm probably going to just be a hipster in Williamsburg or something like that this weekend with some friends who live out there. But Amber, do you have anything great coming up in the next week? You said you're starting to do some traveling and speaking engagements.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned this last week. So the next 2 days, I'm at a photography show here in Toronto called Henry's. I'm speaking on stage both days and also hanging around the conference for those 2 days. And then I'm speaking at a conference on Sunday, and there most of the day it's called Inspire. And I realized that, next time I book myself, I'm working all weekend. I may want to think twice about maybe taking one of those days off. But nonetheless, next weekend, I hope to have a bit of a break. I'll be tweeting a lot. So
at least it
that's
sounds
a fair
like,
warning.
I mean, this is, you know, you'll meet cool people and it's not boring and stuffy. It's like,
oh, no, it'll be really fun.
Yeah. Just, you know, yeah. A long weekend of not putting your feet up.
Yeah. It's all good, though. It's all for a good cause, Sarah, and that cause is social media.
Exactly. And that's why we do what we do. Amber and I would not, well, actually, we might actually do the show even if nobody watched because that's the kind of people that we are. But we do want to make it the best show possible for all of you. So thanks to everybody who watches and listens to us each week. We'll be back at our regular time, Fridays at 1 p.m., 4 p.m. Eastern. Do tune in live if you can. Otherwise, we are on demand. You can subscribe to our show. You can watch us a million of different ways. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.